Is déjà vu more than just a quirk of the brain? Is there always a rational explanation for the paranormal? Should one believe reports of unexplained phenomena? If you've asked yourself these questions before, follow in the footsteps of paranormal podcaster Blake Elrich and delve into the mysteries of the Unknown 9 universe. Unknown 9 Awakening is the action-adventure video game at the heart of the Unknown 9 narrative universe. You play as Haruna, an audacious heroine with the ability to venture into the fold, a mysterious dimension that overlaps our own. On her quest for powerful hidden knowledge, Haruna, who is portrayed by Anya Chalotra, will learn to master her unique connection to the fold, which allows her to channel its powers into our world. But such power does not go unnoticed. She quickly becomes the target of the Ascendants, a splinter faction of a secret society known as the Leap Year Society, who wants to use the Fold to alter the course of human history. Their confrontation will take them across the world, from the sands of Mauritania and perilous Indian jungles to the Gothic landscapes of Portugal. Get ready to dive into a mysterious parallel dimension. Unknown 9 Awakening releases on October 18th, 2024. For PS4, PS5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. Pre-order your copy today and learn more about the Unknown 9 universe at unknown9.com/Shane. That's unknown9.com/Shane.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
Hello, friend. The Zodiac Killer case has captivated Americans and the world for over 5 decades. It is one of the longest unsolved serial murder cases in U.S. history. The man who claimed responsibility for the cold-blooded, callous acts that ended 5 lives called himself the Zodiac. His letters spoke of his attack in boastful and gloating terms. He was proud of what he had done and was excited to toy with law enforcement and the media to cause as much fear and anxiety as he could. He had demonstrated his capacity for violence in each of the 4 known attacks he carried out. He left no doubt about his potential and desire to inflict more harm and claim additional lives. These factors have driven many to relentlessly pursue this man, to obsess over the case, and to search for the missing piece that could finally reveal the answers everyone is seeking. Most importantly, it's a pursuit to deliver the justice that the victims of this cruel killer rightfully deserve. Sadly, it remains an unfulfilled request. There is a theory, however, that we have not yet considered. A theory that turns this entire case upside down. In this final episode of our Zodiac series, we take a closer look at the most controversial theory of them all. The facts of this case remain devastatingly clear. Over 2 years and 4 locations across Northern California, in the late 1960s, 5 people had their lives taken from them in bursts of terrifying violence. 2 people experienced that horror and somehow survived their terrible injuries. What happened to them and the horrific impact on their loved ones has never been in question. For decades, what has been analyzed, debated, and argued is the identity of the Zodiac Killer. His identity, his motives, and how he has evaded capture for so long. a theory that emerged in 2023, has taken a very different perspective on the Zodiac case. This theory on what happened across 1968 and 1969 has been thought-provoking and eye-opening for some, and entirely dismissed and shunned by others. It's a perspective that has become known as the Zodiac Hoax Theory. It suggests that the Zodiac Killer is in fact an illusion.
The Zodiac Killer is a fictional character. He's a literary invention. There was no serial killer. There was no single killer involved in these murders, and the person writing the letters didn't commit any of the murders.
So you're telling me that all the investigators, all the reporters, all the online sleuth, all the people that have looked at the Zodiac case for the last 50 plus years, they've all got it wrong?
Bingo.
Professor Thomas Henry Horan is an English literature graduate with a master's degree in creative writing. He is an academic professor at multiple colleges in the U.S., teaching literature and writing, and is currently based in Missouri. Bold and outgoing, Horan has gone against the mainstream opinions in this case. He has published his belief that the Zodiac murders, along with the ciphers and letters that have intrigued so many since 1968, were not the work of a single killer. Professor Horan's theory offers an unexpected twist to the Zodiac case, challenging the well-established belief in the existence of this serial killer. He suggests that each attack was committed by different, unrelated individuals, making these crimes isolated, rather than the work of a lone serial killer. It is an emotive theory that has caused controversy, but has also planted seeds of doubt. At the heart of any discussion of this shocking case is empathy for the victims of these crimes and their families, those whose lives have been lost and permanently changed by grievous acts of brutality.
I can't stop thinking about the fact that none of these people and their families ever got any justice.
What we think of as the Zodiac Killer is almost exclusively this person, this character, writing letters to the San Francisco Chronicle and a couple other newspapers. And supposedly that would give us a glimpse into the mind of this person, get firsthand information about the killings. And these letters were written in response to articles in the papers about these murders. So it overlaps my field of expertise, reading and writing. So, it interested me on both of those levels. It's true crime, it's a famous unsolved case, but it's also a unique opportunity to study what is apparently a serial killer corresponding with and responding to newspaper articles, and then the newspapers respond to his letters. So altogether, I thought this was a really fascinating opportunity.
The real tragedy of the myth of the Zodiac Killer is not just that it robbed the victims and their families of justice and that it robbed society of justice. The actual story of what really happened to these poor, unfortunate young people cut down on the threshold of life, that story is much more compelling than the myth of the so-called Zodiac Killer.
To delve into this theory, we must consider where the notion that this was the work of a serial killer came from. Starting at the first known crime scene at Lake Herman Road, there were no witnesses to what happened at that quiet spot. There was very little left at the scene around the bodies of Betty Lou Jensen and David Faraday to give detectives many answers. 6 months later, another crime scene awaited them at Blue Rock Springs, just 4 miles away. Darlene Farron was murdered at that location. Michael Maggio somehow survived his injuries, but was only able to give a short description of the shooter. He described a white, heavyset male with a large face, who was approximately 5'8", with short hair. The darkness obscured any more detail, allowing the killer to remain in the shadow, and disappear into the night. 30 minutes later, a phone call came into Vallejo Police Department, reporting a double murder and claiming responsibility. After directing police to Blue Rock Springs, the caller uttered a last sentence before hanging up. The male voice spoke chilling words that claimed he also shot those kids last year. For the first time, the murders of Betty Lou, David, Darlene, and the attempted murder of Michael were linked together. A single killer was claiming responsibility for both attacks. On July 31, 1969, the first Zodiac letters reached the San Francisco Chronicle, the San Francisco Examiner, and the Vallejo Times-Herald. Each near-identical letter arrived with a section of a cipher. Less than 2 weeks later, the San Francisco Examiner received another letter. It was this letter that opened with one now infamous sentence.
"This is the Zodiac speaking."
The Blue Rock Springs phone call and these letters were the evidence that gave rise to these attacks being the work of one man, a serial killer targeting young couples in secluded, quiet spots under the cover of darkness. In the first of many communications with the media, the killer gave himself the moniker the Zodiac and seemed to enjoy the air of mystery he had added to the unfolding story. Professor Horan has a very different interpretation of Lake Herman Road, one that gives the first insight into the fundamentals of this story. He believes the person who called Vallejo police to confess was not the killer at Lake Herman Road or Blue Rock Springs. Horan claims that this was someone making a hoax call, using information they had heard by tuning into the police radio frequencies with a scanner as police responded to the Blue Rock Springs attack, scanning to listen in on law enforcement messages in real time was a common activity by thrill seekers back in 1969. The person who made that call would have known about the unsolved murders at Lake Herman Road from 6 months earlier. The professor claims taking responsibility for those murders also was simply an afterthought before the killer hung up. An individual trying to stir up police and cause menace. In addition, Professor Horan believes that the author of the Zodiac letters was not the killer at either crime scene or the person who made the phone call to the police. The letter writer, according to Horan, piggybacked onto the story given by the caller after the Blue Rock Springs attack. The mystery author claimed he was responsible for both attacks, just as the caller had done. For Horan, this narrative of a serial killer at work was accepted by law enforcement and the media far too quickly. Already, four different individuals are involved in this version of events, each acting independently of each other. The killer at Lake Herman Road, the killer at Blue Rock Springs, the person who made the police phone call, and now the writer of the Zodiac letters. For Horan, this was just the beginning of the people tied to this case. On July 11th, 2023, the Oxygen Network, owned by NBC Universal, released a new documentary. Across two episodes, British filmmaker Andrew Knock explored the Zodiac case, and in particular, the theory of Professor Horan. The 93-minute documentary, filmed during the summer of 2022, introduced Professor Horan's Zodiac hoax theory to a broader audience. For many, this was the first time they heard of Horan's claims. Its release sparked a mixed reaction among the public and Zodiac enthusiasts. Knock himself seemed to approach this project with some apprehension about Professor Horan's theory. but he couldn't deny he was intrigued by it. The Zodiac case was an altogether different one to any other he knew about.
Like most people, I was aware of the book that came out in the 80s by Robert Graysmith, the movie that David Fincher made, which was based on the book, and that had a very, very particular kind of narrative based on this one journalist, or this actually was a cartoonist at the San Francisco Chronicle, his experiences. And like most people, I thought there was one killer. And the more I looked into it, the more I realized there were many, many different theories out there. And just thousands of people who were really into this case, and more than any other kind of true crime mystery. And that's kind of what got me interested in making this as a documentary. It was really the fan base, I hate that's not really the right word, but the armchair detective kind of forum, online kind of detectives. And just there's just thousands and thousands of them. And none of them agree on this case, which is so interesting. They all have their own suspects and they all think everyone else is wrong. And I thought that was just fascinating. How can all these people who have studied thousands of pages, which is kind of unusual for a case to have so much unreleased, so much released material for an unsolved case. It's thousands of pages out there if you know where to find it. They've all looked at some of it and they pick and choose what they like to fit their particular suspect. And they all disagree with each other. And I thought that was really fascinating.
Going back to the first attack attributed to the Zodiac Killer at Lake Herman Road on December 20th, 1968, Nock and Horan began their investigations. Professor Horan highlights key ballistic evidence that he believes tells an intriguing story. On that night, police discovered a single .22 caliber casing on the ground 20 feet from David Faraday's vehicle. According to Horan and Andrew Nock, for the casing to land where it did, the shot likely came from the passenger side of a second vehicle at the scene. They claim this points to the passenger of that vehicle, firing the shots while standing at the passenger side, and a second person inside the vehicle who was driving. This challenges the viewpoint of a lone killer. While this is a compelling theory, it's important to consider that a bullet casing can shift after hitting the hard ground. It might bounce or roll before settling in a different spot further away. Both scenarios are plausible. Strengthening his theory, Horan describes Lake Herman Road as a targeted revenge attack and not a random opportunist assault by a passing stranger. There are some reports that David had a confrontation with a potential drug dealer who was tied to a biker gang operating locally. A gang involved in dealing drugs who were not shy about using violence. Horan believes the attack at Lake Herman Road was carried out to silence David and prevent him from talking. Betty Lou, he thinks, tragically became an unintended victim caught in the crossfire. In this version of events, the shooter had a direct motive against one of his victims and hunted for him to carry out a pre-planned deadly attack. A shooter who then got back into a vehicle and was driven away from the scene into the dark night and obscurity.
Hey friends, shifting my wardrobe from summer to fall is always a challenge. Luckily, Quince offers timeless, high-quality items that makes this transition smooth, ensuring my wardrobe stays fresh without blowing my budget. Whether it's cashmere sweaters starting at just $50, versatile pants for every occasion, or their luxurious washable silk tops, Quince has everything I need. Right now, I'm wearing the Flowknit Breeze Performance Polo in Heather Sky Blue. I've been dressing business casual a lot lately, and I have to say, this polo is by far one of the best I've ever owned. Not only is it incredibly stylish, but it's also super comfortable, and the price is unbeatable. The material breathes so much better than those stuffy polos, and it looks perfectly professional. It's truly a game changer in my wardrobe, and the best part?
all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the middleman, passing the savings on to us. Make switching seasons a breeze with Quince's high-quality closet essentials. Go to quince.com/Shane for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/Shane to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/Shane.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
6 months later, at Blue Rock Springs, Professor Horan claims this was not the same killer carrying out his second attack. He maintains that, like the previous incident, it was a targeted attack with one specific victim in mind. Horan focuses on Darlene Farron and believes she was shot multiple times that night by her ex-husband, a man called Jim Phillips Crabtree. Darlene and Jim had separated 2 years before her murder, with Darlene going on to marry Dean Farron. Although Jim had also moved on and was in a new long-term relationship at the time of the killing, Horan suggests he remained connected to the crime. Horan claims Jim Crabtree harbored resentment toward Darlene for moving on so quickly after they separated. Interviews with Darlene's sister supports the idea that Jim was deeply upset, leaving the area soon after their breakup. Jim Crabtree was also interviewed by detectives months after the murder and told police he was hiking in Boulder Creek, California, with his common-law wife at the time of the shooting. Although investigators ruled him out as a suspect, Horan argues this was a mistake. He believes the investigation was overly influenced by the growing belief that a serial killer was responsible for the attacks. Andrew Nock tracked down Jim Crabtree to ask him directly if he was involved in the murder of Darlene and the attempted murder of Michael.
One of them said, "Did you know Darlene?" And I said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, did you know she was murdered?" So I said, "No, I don't follow her." So then they took me to Vallejo, where I did writing samples.
So they asked you for a handwriting sample because they thought you may have written the letters to the press from the Zodiac?
Oh, yeah.
I have to ask you, did you kill Darlene?
Guy who was taking an acid trip when she was shot. I've heard that her family absolutely said it was me. Why'd you, little bitch? Why'd you do that? You know nothing about me.
When you look at Darlene's murder, the most obvious suspect has to be Darlene's ex-husband, Jim. Maybe he's not guilty, but you do have a prime suspect who is worthy of further investigation. But by the time the police catch up with him, there's now this runaway narrative that the murders are committed by one person who's been writing these letters. And the police couldn't prove that Jim was the so-called Zodiac killer, so they lost interest in him.
3 months after the Blue Rock Springs attack, Brian Hartnell and Cecilia Shepherd were attacked at Lake Berryessa. Professor Horan theorizes that the man seen watching three girls earlier that day was the same person who attacked Brian and Cecilia. According to Horan, the hood worn by the assailant, marked with the Zodiac symbol, was a prop intended to create a link to an already infamous serial killer. To challenge the notion that a single killer was responsible for these crimes, Horan presents an alternative narrative that includes both known and unknown individuals related to the Zodiac investigation. According to Horan, Dennis Land, the first deputy on the scene and the one who found Brian by the roadside, might have been involved in the stabbings, despite no evidence to link him to the attack. Reports suggest that Land didn't handle some of the evidence at the crime scene directly. A human error, made under stressful circumstances, is an acceptable explanation. However, Horan thinks this mistake was in fact an intentional move by Land to cover his own tracks. Horan suggests he may not have been working alone and highlights one name he feels should have been looked at more closely. Leonard Lake was an ex-Marine who worked with a man named Charles Ng in the early 1980s. These names are infamous in true crime circles. The pair tortured and killed 11 people inside a cabin in Willsieville, California. It is a remote location around 134 miles from Lake Berryessa. The true number of victims who were killed by Lake and Ng has never been determined. Leonard Lake killed himself in 1985 when in custody after being arrested for possession of an illegal gun. He swallowed a cyanide capsule he had hidden inside his clothes. Horan believes this method, used by Lake in his later killings, was a close match to the communication and attack Brian Hartnell was able to report after the attack at Lake Berryessa on September 1969. The writing on the door of Hartnell's 1964 Volkswagen Karmann Ghia is another fact of the case where Horan's interpretation differs. The message, sprawled on the passenger side door in black ink, detailed the date and location of previous attacks believed to have been carried out by the Zodiac. The final line stated, September 27, 6:30, by knife, relating directly to the events that had occurred 510 miles away from where the vehicle was parked. Officers were left with no doubt that this was meant as a claim of responsibility by the Zodiac Killer. Horan, however, does not agree and has a different theory of how this message was written. He has pointed to Napa Police Deputy Harold Snook as responsible. More than this, after seeking Snook's handwriting and believing it matched the Zodiac letters, Horan believes Harold Snook was the author of all the Zodiac letters. Snook was a former military serviceman who served in both the Army and the Air Force and later became a newspaper editor. He joined the Napa Police Department in 1961 and went on to specialize in narcotics and crime scene investigations. The professor claims Snook took advantage of the situation at Lake Berryessa, writing the message on the door when no one was looking, to further cement the idea of the Zodiac serial killer he created through earlier letters. The message on the vehicle had been discovered by Napa deputy David Collins not long after 8 p.m. This means Snook would have had to travel to Lake Berryessa earlier in the evening between the attack at 6:30 p.m. and the discovery of the message just after 8 p.m. to have written it himself. Further, he had to access the vehicle at the scene without being spotted by the officers already there before leaving unnoticed and being back in Napa to take the phone call informing him of the attack at just after 8:30 p.m. Snook was first sent to process the payphone in Napa that the killer used to call the police before he went on to Lake Berryessa later in the evening. Reports logged that he had arrived at the lake around midnight. Lake Berryessa is a 30-minute drive from the city of Napa and it is almost 48 miles away from Vallejo. Horan's theory suggests that Snook orchestrated the illusion of the Zodiac Killer by writing letters to newspapers and police under the Zodiac name, linking these various crimes together. The Zodiac letter writer, being an active police officer for Horan, would also explain how many of the Zodiac letters contain facts about the murders and crime scenes that only the killer would know. These are facts that Horan asserts are all contained within the police reports, and he is confident they were used to write the letters convincingly. Harold Snook died in July 2010. There is no evidence linking him to the Zodiac letters, and he has never been accused of any crime or involvement in the Zodiac case. Overall, Horan's theory of the events at Lake Berryessa paints a complex picture involving multiple individuals acting independently, yet all pointing to the same serial killer. While this scenario seems improbable, Horan points out that it remains a possibility. The final crime scene attributed to the Zodiac Killer was in San Francisco on October 11, 1969. Professor Horan approaches the murder of cab driver 29-year-old Paul Stein in the same way as the previous attacks. He provides an alternative explanation for Stein's murder. Horan suggests that Paul Stein was murdered as part of a string of robberies targeting cab drivers in San Francisco at the time. He highlights the 1962 murder of cab driver Ray Davis in Oceanside, pointing to the similarities in cases and how both were most likely the result of tragic, random acts of violence. These are not crimes that, according to Horan, had anything to do with the Zodiac Killer. The murder of Paul Stein marked a notable shift in the Zodiac's methods. It's clear that if a letter from the Zodiac, which included a piece of Paul's blood-stained shirt, had not been sent after his murder, this crime likely would have never been linked to the killer at all. Horan believes this letter was also a hoax. He argues that the evidence stored at San Francisco Police Headquarters was not secure. It was accessible to many who may have wished to take items for their own use. He suggests that staff members at the coroner's office or an active police officer could have been responsible for the theft of evidence, later used to maintain the deception of a Zodiac serial killer. Although Horan believes the author of the Zodiac letters was Harold Snook, he does not necessarily believe he was the hand behind the letters containing Paul Stein's shirt. For these, he suggests that they may have been penned by a journalist eager to sustain public interest in the Zodiac investigation. Horan specifically points to Paul Avery, a reporter and for a period the editor of the San Francisco Chronicle, as someone who might have been motivated to keep the investigation going by any means. Horan speculates that the pieces of Paul Stein's shirt could have also been given to Paul Avery, who then decided to use them to suggest the Zodiac's involvement in Stein's murder. There is no evidence that Paul Avery had any involvement in the writing of the Zodiac letters. He was a happy and eager editor, but not a journalist known for or expected to bend the truth for continued publicity, especially when it came to multiple murders. However, for Horan, this element of his theory underscores a central theme. He believes the Zodiac case evolved into a serial killer narrative, largely through media manipulation during the time of the murders. He argues that the media, driven by sensationalism and a desire to maintain public interest, latched on to the Zodiac persona through the letters. These letters were key and linking otherwise unconnected crime scenes and cementing the idea of a single elusive serial killer named Zodiac. Once the media seized on this narrative, it snowballed. Reporters like Paul Avery, Horan contends, played an active role in shaping the story. The Zodiac figure became more than just a suspect. It became a media-driven phenomenon. Horan believes the media's fixation on the Zodiac made it nearly impossible for police to consider alternative explanations. According to Horan, the media's involvement not only fueled the mystery of the Zodiac, but also shaped the direction of the investigation, making it harder for authorities to break free from the Zodiac myth and explore other angles. Proposing a hoax theory that suggests everyone has misinterpreted these events from the outset is both bold and provocative. The accusations from Professor Horan often lack substantial evidence, which raises skepticism about his conclusions. However, his claims all remain within the realm of possibility, and with a case as complex as this, and with so many unknowns, an open mind, it could be argued, should always be maintained to consider different perspectives and possibilities. The Zodiac letters captivated Professor Horan, along with the ensuing discussions in newspapers and online forums, where the case is debated by dedicated and passionate individuals. While his approach and his conclusions may produce strong reactions, questioning whether these crimes could have been committed by different individuals rather than a single serial killer is an interesting avenue to explore. Cold cases often linger in the realm of the unknown, surrounded by countless unanswered questions. The longer they remain unsolved, with no new evidence or significant progress, the less likely it becomes that they will ever be resolved. The Zodiac case sadly exemplifies this reality. While there have been instances where justice has been served decades after crimes were committed, the hope for closure remains fragile. In this case, 5 innocent lives were lost, and many others have been deeply affected by these heinous acts. The absence of accountability and the silence of unanswered questions is difficult to comprehend and accept. The Zodiac case is shrouded in a multitude of theories. Each offers their own perspectives on the events of 1968 and 1969. It is a case that remains a mystery, a haunting reminder of the lives lost to violence and the ongoing search for justice that captivates us all. Ultimately, it highlights the unsettling truth that some mysteries may never be solved. It leaves those who seek answers with an unsettling quiet and a search for closure that never comes. Yet as long as we continue to ask questions and pursue the truth, hope endures that one day clarity and justice may still emerge from the shadows.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details. Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.